Let's go ahead and grab our Bibles in. We're going to look here at, we're continuing our study on Bible doctrines. We're looking at sin. So we looked at what is sin. It's essentially the transgression of the law. It's to disobey God, to go beyond what he says. The origin of sin, it originated with what or where or who? With Satan. All right, where do we find that at in the Bible? Isaiah 14. Isaiah chapter 14. All right. And it entered this world how? Or by means of what? How did sin enter this world that we live on? Clarify. Okay, so be more specific. It entered by okay, right, correct. Yeah, I'm wanting to us to like right, be more specific. Yes, it was disobedience, and I'm not even talking specifically about the sin that they that was committed, but what specifically was it that brought sin into this world? Okay, yes, but what specifically, if I say more, I'm going to give it away. There we go, that's where I was going with it, by one man. And I'm not trying to nitpick, you said by Adam and Eve's sin, but it specifically, it came into this world by Adam's sin. Because yes, Eve no doubt sinned, but it was when Adam decided to, because God had made him the head, God had put him in charge. And when Adam chose to, Romans 5:12, wherefore as by one man sin entered into the world. Okay, so it was through Adam, all right? Now, as we continue through, the key Greek word translated sin is hamartano. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that right. It means to err or miss the mark. The key Hebrew word translated sin is chata, which also means to err or miss the mark. So there's some other Old Testament Hebrew words for sin, asham, meaning to be guilty, avon, to pervert or to make crooked, chaga, to astray, and pasha, to break away or to rebel against authority. But ultimately, when we look at sin, it's to miss the mark, to not hit God's standard. Okay, that's what it's saying. God has set his standard right here, and we fall short of it. Romans 3:23 is my favorite verse to look at that understanding of what sin is. It's to miss the mark. We've all come short of the glory of God. We didn't hit the standard. Why? Because we've transgressed, because we've gone beyond the bounds of the law. And once we did that, we missed the mark that God had set for us. Okay? So some key Bible passages that deal with sin. Let's go ahead and look at this. Go to Genesis chapter 3 is an obvious one. But let's go to Genesis chapter 6. I mean, Genesis 3, we should all just know that that's most definitely one. So some key passages that deal with sin is Genesis 6. In verse 3, it says, "And the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men, which were of old men of renown. And here it is, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." This is what happens to us when we are left to ourselves. This is what we degrade to. Every person is capable of this verse right here, of verse 5. Every one of us, okay? If you doubt that within yourself or within somebody else, and here's a lot of times parents are like, well, not my baby. You are... The next passage we're going to go to, and I'm not really, we can turn there if you want, but it's Jeremiah 17:9. Then you are the epitome of that verse. If you think that you're not capable of the most heinous sins, then I wonder, have you ever even meditated at all on your own thoughts, on your own heart? Because what it says right here, that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and every imagination of the thoughts of man's heart was only evil continually. We are all capable of that. When I look at what happened to Victoria Martins a few years back, and I think the thoughts of their hearts were only evil continually, to do something that, there's not even words that describe how wicked and evil that was. That's a person going about as low as they can. When we look at many of the things that happened in Nazi concentration camps, that's a man's heart going as far as it can. And we are all capable of that. And if a person doesn't believe that that's true of really anybody apart from the grace of God, then they are deceived. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? If it's deceitful above all things, then there's nothing that's more deceitful than our heart. Okay, that's every one of us, right? Deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. And that's what it said of our own hearts. It's the most deceitful thing there is out there. So for us to think that, well, I would never do that. I could never do that. Think of the most heinous sin there is that you can think of, the most abominable thing that you could think of. You're capable of doing that. Okay, you are. Because here's how sin works. And it's important to understand this. It's a progression. When you'll do something now that bothers your conscience, and you'll do it and you'll be like, oh, that was so wrong. But you know what? The next time it's easier. And the next time after that it's easier. And then it gets easier. And then you go to something else that maybe sears your conscience or maybe not sears it, but pricks your conscience. And you're like, I shouldn't have done that. But then you go ahead and do it anyway, and you've done it, and now the next time it's easier and easier. And it's a progression. You slowly progress to things that you said when you were over here, maybe close with God, and you said, oh, I will never do that. You get to here where you've done some things that you shouldn't have, and you know you shouldn't have, and you felt bad about it. And now the thing that you said you'd never do, you're closer to doing it, and it's easier for you to do it. And that's exactly what happens. Sin will deceive you. It costs you more than you want to pay. It keeps you longer than you want to stay. I mean, that's what sin does. It deceives you. It destroys you. And it will bring you down this road of progression to where you'll do things you never thought you would do. I mean, I can't think of a young lady that would ever think she would sell herself to men. I don't think any young lady grows up thinking, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I want to do. And most would say, I would never do that. Till you get hooked on drugs. And then you want to feed that addiction. And then you'll do something you thought you'd never do. I mean, that's how it works. And that's a reality for millions of girls. Millions of girls out there. And guys too. Guys too. And I just want us to understand the reality of how bad sin is and how capable even we are of committing the most heinous sins. And people think, well, no Christian should do that, right? No Christian should do that. But we've got David, a man after God's own heart, who was willing to commit adultery and murder to cover up his sin. I mean, that's pretty bad. Moses did the same thing. He murdered a man, and then he's like, oops, better bury him in his rage. Murdered a man, and then he's like, better cover this up. Moses, probably the greatest leader that's ever lived outside of Jesus Christ. That's just my opinion. I think Moses was probably the greatest leader that's ever lived. And used mightily of God, no doubt. I mean, the Old Testament, we say it would rest on Moses. I mean, he was like the foundation of it. We understand it's God, but you get what I'm saying. I mean, he's pretty important in God's scheme of things. And yet he was capable of that. So for us to think that we're not, it saddens me that Christians, I'm not even talking about lost people, I'm talking about Christians, don't think that they're capable of doing these things. I'm like, your heart's already deceived. If you don't think you're capable of it, then you're more capable than those that do think they're capable of it. You're closer to doing it than those that think they can't or won't. And that's a pride issue. So just be careful with that. And I say all this to say that This verse, Genesis 6:5, is a description of what we are capable of. Now, I say this. Nobody that is dying to themselves daily and seeking Christ is capable of verse 5, of Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. If we're seeking Christ, if we're confessing our sins, if we're dying to ourselves daily, we're not capable of verse 5. Of just the most important. We're cleansing it. We're confessing our sins. He's faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. So I'm not saying that every one of us is going to do these wicked, evil things. I'm saying we're capable of it. We're walking in fellowship with Christ. Then we're not. You're not going to do it if you're dying to yourself daily. If you're walking in the Spirit and not after the lusts of the flesh, then you're not going to do these things. That's not a worry for you. But you always have to have that. I need to be close to God. I have to walk in the Spirit and not fulfill the lust of the flesh. That has to be a daily part of your life, a regular part of your life, in order to not do those things, okay? Another key passage is Exodus chapter 20. Who knows what's there? The Ten Commandments. Every one of us should memorize that. We're not going to necessarily read through them, but it starts in verse 3, and the 10th commandment finishes up in verse 17. So you can see all 10 there. Why? Those are just the canons pointing at us on execution. That's what they are. They're labeling us as guilty. They leave us condemned. Another one, let's go to Mark chapter 7, please. Mark chapter 7. This goes hand in hand with Jeremiah 17. I forget the reference, but in Proverbs also, I think it's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, with all diligence, for how bitter the issues of life. This goes hand in hand with that. It says in Mark chapter 7, verse 20, and he said, "That which cometh out of the man, that defileth the man. For from within, out of the heart of man, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness, all these evil things within and defile the man." Not, you know, not washing your hands and things like that. Not the things on the outside. It's the things on the inside that defile you. Now, obviously, we know that you can do things on the outside that defile you, but that's a result of what's on the inside. Okay, it starts on the inside first, and that's what Jesus is pointing out. He says, it's from within. That's from the heart proceed all these things, these wicked things. That's where it starts. That's the issue. So it's what's on the inside. It's the internal, not the external. And this was the problem with the Pharisees. I mean, that's why Jesus rebuked them all the time, is because they looked good on the outside, but the inside was just complete filth. I mean, he said, you're like, you know, whited sepulchres. It's clean on the outside, but on the inside, it's dead men's bones. It's those, and to a Jew, that defiles you, okay? And that's what he was saying. That's where the problem is. It's what's on the inside. And it's the same thing for us. It's different for us today. And there's still people like that today in churches that look good on the outside, but on the inside they're not. And that's just as real today as it was then. You know, Jesus called them hypocrites. It's no different today. Those that act the part and say it, and oh, they know all the lingo and all that stuff, but yet their life doesn't line up with what the scriptures say. And I'm not talking about their life lining up with, you know, what a church says, what a religion says, but their life lining up with what the scriptures say. That's what needs to happen. Does their life line up with that? Does your life line up with that? Now, again, when I talk about it, I'm not talking about us being sinlessly perfect, nothing like that. That's an impossibility. We can't be. But I'm talking about our heart attitude. Are we striving to do what God says? Are we striving to walk in obedience to God? That's what we're looking at here. That's what we're wanting. But there's still hypocrites today, just like there was then. And why? Because it's what comes from within, not necessarily what's on the outside. Okay? When you look at the devastation that is caused by easy believism. And it's filled with this. And many times, many, many times, in my opinion, those that are caught up in easy believism and are victims of it, they themselves are deceived. Okay, I don't think that they're intentionally trying to deceive people and be a fake. Some of them no doubt are, and they know that, but the majority of them that in my experience, what I have personally witnessed, they're not purposely trying to deceive people. They themselves are deceived because they've been taught this false doctrine. But you eventually see it lived out, that what is on the inside comes out. And that's what ends up happening. And we have to beware of that. We have to understand that it's from the heart of man proceed all these evil things. And let me add further, even for a saved person. I mean, how was it that David ended up committing adultery? I mean, to me, there's no doubt he was saved. And I'm not trying to make excuses for sin. But we have to look at the reality that saved people sin, don't they? Otherwise, why is 1 John 1:8 through 10 written? Now, let me ask, who's not familiar with what 1 John 1:8 through 10 says? Just raise your hand if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about. Did you raise your hand? Okay, well, let's go ahead and turn there then. That's fine. And let's turn to 1 John 1:8 through 10. There's no shame in not knowing what some reference is. So we understand then that a saved person, a truly saved person can sin, can and do sin. I mean, if you're saved, you know that that's a fact. Okay, so let's just look at this. If we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, He is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say that we have not sinned, we make Him a liar and His word is not in us. So there it is again. Verse 8, if we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves. There's that deceit. Okay, so obviously this is a reality that saved people, can and do sin. So where's the fountain then of this? You all tell me, where's the fountain then of this sin within a lost person or a saved person? Let's wait and see if someone else answers. Anybody, where's the fountain of it, the source of it? The heart, that's right. It's the heart, okay? That's what Mark chapter 7 says, for from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness. We could look at this list and then we could take this over to Colossians, to Galatians, and see similar lists, to Ephesians, and see similar lists listing these same things, to 1 Corinthians, and see very similar things, that it's dealing with saved people. Baptized people, church members, that these same sins. But my point is that saved or lost, it's from the heart. That's where sin comes from. That's how it was with King David. When he sinned against God with Bathsheba, where did it come from? It's not like this lady like fell out of the sky and there she was and he was like, oh, I couldn't help myself. No, he looked for it. He saw it and he continued to go after it. And to seek it. Why? Because it was in his heart. That's what he wanted. I mean, it's not like he was out, target practicing with an arrow. He ran in front of the arrow that he shot, and he was, oh, I didn't know what happened. No, he used to kill this guy. I want him dead. Put him in the hottest battle and then withdraw. His captain knew what that meant. This guy needs to be dead. The king wants him dead. Let's get him dead. I mean, it all came from in his heart. He purposed it in here. Just like Daniel purposed in his heart not to sin against God, we purpose in our heart to sin against God. That, right? I mean, do you not know that in your own life? Don't you purpose in your heart sometimes to just sin against God? I understand there's sins of ignorance that we do, and the Bible talks about that even in the offerings that are given. Sometimes we sin and don't even realize we've done it. But most of the time, when we sin, we're 100% aware of it, are we not? Okay, so it proceeds from here. We need to understand that's where sin comes from. The law, again, Exodus 20, reveals sin not only externally, but internally. So when we look at the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not covet, okay? So it does reveal sin externally, but also internally, and we get that. We have a better understanding of it from the New Testament. So let's go to Matthew chapter 5. this should be familiar to most of us. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 21, it says, "Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, Thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment, and whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council, but whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire." So even if your heart is not right, is what this is talking about, and oftentimes we'll look towards, if it's towards hatred, and that's what 1 John says, 3:15, I believe it says, if you hate your brother, you're a murderer. Well, in Matthew 5, it takes it even farther. It says, if you just have the wrong dispute, you're in danger of the same judgment of if you killed someone. So how important relationships are. Being right with other people in our heart, because it's a heart issue. Let's go ahead and go to also verse 27. It says, ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, Thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. So it's as good as done. The deed is done. You've done it in your heart. Why? Because that's where these evil things proceed from, the heart. So the law reveals sin externally, yes, but also internally. And that's the stuff nobody sees. We can all see the external. We don't see the internal, but God does. And that's why it's a heart issue. That's why the source of our sin is in our heart. And we have to understand that. This is really where the origin of sin is. So now some other Bible words for sin. Evil, wickedness, iniquity, rebellion, unrighteous, unholy, ungodly, works of darkness, error, transgression, trespass, offense. And there's a bunch of references with these. I'm not going to have us turn to all of them. We look at man's sinful nature described in Genesis 6:5. It says that they're only evil continually. This is our sinful nature, all right? We're desperately wicked, Jeremiah 17:9. This is how God describes our sinful nature. In Psalm 51:5, it says we're shapen in iniquity. Psalm 58:3 says we're estranged from the womb. Proverbs 22:15 says that foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. Foolishness is bound in a child's heart. Let's go ahead and turn to that. There's a principle being taught here that goes beyond just dealing with children. Corporal punishment, but also capital punishment. Okay, this is a principle our nation would do a good job to learn. How many of you here think that you know better than God? Nobody? That's good. I'm glad none of us think that. So if God created man, and again, Proverbs is a good study. Okay, on what's called psychology. Okay, that's what that word for soul is, psyche. It's psychology. It's psychology is the study of the soul, so it is spiritual. It's not some science like we call it today. Okay, and God, who created the soul, knows better than anybody, all right, what it is and how it operates and how to deal with it. And look, here's what he says about mankind in general. This is a principle that applies throughout time to every culture, every generation, okay? He says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. It's just there. There it is. Why? Because it's in the heart, okay? It's bound in the heart of a child because out of our heart proceed these evil things. And it's bound in the heart of a child. And anybody that's been around children, you know this. You know you don't have to teach them to lie to you. Like, I don't know of anyone that teaches children to lie to me when you've done something wrong. Not one of us does. But man, those little monsters will lie to us. Like, I can look at my four monsters, and they've lied to me over stuff. Like, when they were little, even. Like, things that, to cover themselves, they're like, I don't want to get in trouble, and they've lied to me. I used to love when my wife worked at the preschool, because just the stories she would come home with of these little kids, I'm like, man, and they're so stinking cute too when you look at them, but some of them are little monsters, man. But just the stories are, like, we laugh at them because it's funny and they're little, but I'm telling you that cute little kid grows up to be the adults that are rioting in the streets. Okay, why? Because foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. Okay, but there's an answer for it. And if we keep reading, we get the answer. It says foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but, okay, so here's the contrast. This is Hebrew parallelism, all right? It's going to compare these things, and it either compares them or contrasts them. This is a contrast, okay? So he's saying here that foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. So this is any child, every child, okay? You, me, our own children, even some of you yet, the children you don't have yet, foolishness is going to be bound in their heart, okay? But lo and behold, praise the Lord, you already know, great, my child's a fool, yep. All right, your child's a fool. All right, just like you were, just like we are at times, okay? But your child's a fool. So what's the correction for it? All right, well, here it is. God's going to contrast these two thoughts, or this thought. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but what fixes that? The rod of correction shall drive it far from him. The rod of correction. So you have to correct them with the rod. What's God saying? Like, they need some physical pain to teach them that that's wrong. That's what they need. And I said this is why it's a principle that we can apply. That's corporal punishment, but capital punishment. When we actually punish people for their crimes in our society. We've got our government was like praising people for rioting and destroying people's private property. Rather than punishing them, what needed to happen is those people swiftly, that nonsense was stopped. You're putting other people in danger. You're destroying other people's livelihood. You destroy someone's business and you loot it, they may be out of business for good now. And what livelihood do they have now? How do they take care of their family? Well, they're not hurting anybody. What are you talking about? They're not hurting anybody. Oh, well, they have insurance. And yeah, and now after they make a claim, they can't afford their insurance. See, do we not realize there's consequences to all of this stuff? Because that's what it is. So if government's doing its job, which is what Romans 13 talks about, then they would have gone in and stopped that instead of encouraging bad behavior. But there is an epidemic in our society today to encourage bad behavior in children, which leads right up to adulthood. And we have to put a stop to that. What puts a stop to that? Well, the rod of correction. See, it's a rod of correction to correct them. That's what it is. And that's what our society needs now. Man, it drives me crazy in this state that under Governor Richardson, we got rid of capital punishment. Like, it never even happened very often. They'd be on death row for 30 years, but still, that we got rid of it is nonsense, because now there's no threat to criminals, really. I mean, some people that have been institutionalized in prisons, they're like, this is just a way of life. You go in, you come out. You go in, you come out. I'm okay with it. I'm good. If this is how I have to live, they don't mind it. There's no worry there in that. They're like, yeah, they'll take care of me. They'll feed me. I can still do the same criminal activity in here that I was doing out there. I'll get out again. There's no threat. But I'm telling you, if we would start swiftly dealing with people, and if you take a life, you lose your life, I guarantee that person's never going to kill anyone again. And this is what we need. This is the principle that's being taught here, that foolishness is found in the heart of a child. Remember, where did murders come from? What did Jesus say? They come from the heart, right? So if foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, and well, if someone murders, then that's bound in their heart. So what drives it far from them? In this case, we understand the principles talking about deal with them when they're young. But the same principle. Okay, this is God's principle on this. This is what we need to do. This is how we help our generation. Help the next generation. Foolishness is bound in the heart. So our sinful nature described, it's only evil continually. It's desperately wicked. We're shaping in iniquity. We're estranged from the womb. Foolishness is bound in the heart. Our righteousness is our good deeds. All the righteous things we try and do, they're just like filthy rags to God. Okay, and trying to earn his favor, that's all they are. They're filthy rags. And then Isaiah 53:6 says, we've all gone astray and every man's turned to his own way. This is why Christ had to come, because we've gone astray from God and we've turned to our own way. Well, it's about me. It's what I want. This is how God looks and sees us. This is because we've all turned to our own way. This is why God says, after God. See, we love him. Why? Yeah, because he first loved us. He came after us. It wasn't Adam and Eve. After they sinned, they were like, God, help us. Where are you? We messed up. No, they were hiding. God had to come. Where art thou, Adam? I'm positive. It's like when your kids are little and they do something wrong and they're hiding from you and you know right where they're at and you're like, where are you? Come on out. Come on. Like they're in the closet or something. You're like, come on out. Come on. I know you're in there. Let's go. That's how I picture like Adam and Eve are hiding behind a bush and God's like standing right at the bush. And he's like, Adam, where art thou? Like that's in my mind, that's how I picture it. He's just like staring right at him. Adam, where art thou? Come on, I see you. Like that's how it was. We don't seek God. We run from him. We turn to our own way. But God in his love and mercy, he still comes after us. He still seeks us. But that's what we are. That's what mankind is. That's what we're made of. So we should really put nothing past man. Now, I'm not saying that we need to like look at each other all suspect, like, no, because we're striving and we're following the Lord. We're trying to. And it's not saying that every person does all of these things and is completely given over to them. What it's saying is every man's capable of it. And it really shouldn't surprise us when we hear of heinous, horrible things. Like, people were shocked at the things that they saw when the concentration camps were liberated. They were shocked. And they were shocked because there'd been some things to keep it in check. But a Bible-believing Christian shouldn't have been. Because it's like, well, yeah, that's the depravity of man. That's what we are capable of. I mean, human skin lampshades. I remember when I was like probably, I might have been in high school, maybe a little younger, maybe in middle school. When I first heard of that, I was shocked. I was like, what? How could they do that? But had I known the Bible and what it says about man, I wouldn't have been shocked at all. See, our society and the rules of our society, thank God, have protected us from a lot of these horrible things that it is uncommon here, and I thank God for that. It should be. But we as God's people should understand that this is what any human is capable of, these types of things, the most horrible things. God doesn't hide things from us about how bad they were. I mean, think about people offering their children to Moloch, burning them alive because of them going after their own way, them having turned from God, and the fornication that came about because of their so-called worship of these false gods. And then the result is now there's children being born. What do we do with them? Well, today we have the abortion mill of Planned Parenthood and other places. That's how it's dealt with today. But back then, they didn't necessarily have that. So what would they do? They'd give birth to the child. And then here we're offering in sacrifice to our God. And we're just going to heat it up and burn that child alive in the arms of that false god. And we're going to beat the drum so loud we don't hear the children screaming. Yeah. We're no different today. We just do it in the womb so we don't have to hear the child screaming. As it's trying to get away from the forceps that are ripping it to pieces. Because that's humane. See, mankind's still the same today. We just, oh, well, if we define it as it's not a human, we're good to go. That soothes my conscience. That's the same. That's going to pass as good as it did for the Nazis to say that everything we did was legal. Because they passed laws to make all of it legal. So that's how good that's going to fly. Because when the rest of the world found out what they were doing, well, they held the Nuremberg trials and found them all accountable. It doesn't matter if you passed it as a law. It's immoral. It's against, just violates humanity, the laws of humanity, natural law. It's wrong. Just like we can look at slavery and them classifying them as, you know, 2/3 of a person. Says who? Well, thank you. You know, Charles Darwin had a large part to do with that, with encouraging that and that mind frame. Just evolution. You know, but just because something is legal doesn't mean it's right. And we've got to look at that in our own society, even amongst ourselves. Just because it's accepted in our society doesn't mean it's right. I mean, because if you were born in the early 1800s, slavery would have been normal. It's just a part of life. And that's what people don't understand when they start looking at things like that. Like, they want to come against every founding father we ever had because they didn't speak out against slavery maybe like we would today. But put yourself in the context of that culture. It was normal. And by the way, slavery has been a part of humanity since the very beginning. I'm not saying it's right, but it's been a part of humanity. It still is. It still goes on today. Like, people aren't crying about the slavery that goes on today. The people sold into sex slavery, the people that are still indentured slaves. You know, it's still happening today in other parts of the world. We just don't hear about it because our media cleanses it and just like, we'll just ignore that and everything's good in America, yay. But it still happens today and they don't make a big deal about it. But I'm just saying, just because something is seen as accepted in our society doesn't mean that it's right before God. That's why we have to go before God. And to me, like, I'm not going to mock those that were here in America during the slave times because I wasn't living in that, because I'm coming at it from the perspective that we are in right now, and it's clear to me that it's wrong. But to me, as I look even at the Bible, if every man has to stand and give an account of himself before God, then that tells you that every man's equal. That no man, no one man based on their skin color or anything like that is better than any other man, because we're all going to give an account to God. And God is no respecter of persons. So if God doesn't respect persons based on their skin color, then who are we to do that? Why would we do that? I mean, it's pretty clear to me biblically. And then even further, when God understood the differences and the problems between Jew and Gentile, you think God didn't know that there was some racism there between Jews and Gentiles? Even still to this day, look at how this world, for the most part, looks down on Jews. Even still, I mean, look, a shipload of Jews was sent here from Germany and to many countries they hit on. They wanted to just get away from Germany, and they were trying to flee to these other lands as refugees, and they all turned them back. They came to America. We wouldn't let them dock. We said, nope, turn around, go back to Germany. I mean, that was originally Hitler's plan. I don't know how many of you know that, but that was his plan. We just want them to leave Germany. He didn't intend to kill them. He didn't like them, and what he did was wrong. Even how he thought about them was wrong, but he didn't want to kill them. He said, just get out of Germany. But no one else wanted them either. But God understood the animosity. Look at how he deals with it. Even with the church, he's trying to teach the church. But hey, you two that are two, you're now one. You're now united. There's no Jew and Gentile. There's Church of God. That's what it is. Once you're in the church, those distinctions are gone. Bond and free doesn't matter in the church. Like, we're not having separate seating for, oh, well, you're a slave, you're not, okay. Non-slaves up here, slaves, you go sit on the top. No, we don't. Why? Because we're all one. That's how God sees us. That's how God sees us, and that's how we need to look at it. So, we have to understand man's sinful nature. We all turn to our own way. Evil continually. This is what's in the heart of man. And we have to watch it in our own selves, in our own lives. How will we deal with that and understand what man is capable of? That'll help us go a long way with the culture in which we live. Even understanding, to me, how bad things could get. I've heard since I was a kid that the one thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. And that's probably the most true statement a man has ever said, outside of the words from the Bible, a lost man has ever said. Because it's true, we don't. I mean, people will mock you when you will look and see what politicians are saying, and I'm just going to use gun control. We could use a lot of topics, the sodomite agenda. We could look at abortion, free speech, but I'm going to look at gun control. When you'll see what they're saying and what they're doing, you say they're coming for our guns. They're never going to take everyone's guns here. Well, then why are they trying? Why are they trying? Like, how has it worked in other countries? It's incremental. This is how they do it. And even if they pass a law that says this is illegal, it's illegal to own this and you need to turn them in, and nobody does it, because that's what would happen in America if they passed a law outlawing it, because they've done it in other places, and no one, hardly anybody turned in their bump stocks. I mean, it's like less than 10% turn them in. When they do a magazine ban and say, oh, you can't have over, 10 rounds, no one turns in their magazines. It doesn't happen. You say, see, no one's going to follow it. Okay, but get caught with them and see what happens to you. Then they're going to apply the law. They might not be kicking indoors, but if you get caught with it, guess what's going to happen? You're going to answer for the crime now. It's a crime now. And that's what ends up happening. So they're not coming for our guns. Yes, they are. Why are they passing these laws? Because they want to come for them. Why? Because it's a control scheme. And when we understand that this men are evil, and I've heard this statement since I was a child too, absolute power corrupts absolutely. No one wants to give up power once they get it. No one does that. There's very few people, politicians, you look at them. I'm one of a few senators that believe in term limits, and they'll run for what they believe is a fair amount of term limits that they're preaching, and then they won't run again because they say, no, this is what I believe, and they hold up to their principles. Most people don't do that. I mean, Joe Biden's been in office for 47 years, 50 years. 50 years. He's going to fix it all now. Are we retarded or something to think this guy's going to change anything? What's he been doing? Where is he? What is he saying, and where is he going? I mean, I just look at the direction someone's going, and I'm like, you guys keep talking about taking guns, and I mean, he said, I'm coming, day one, I'm coming for your guns. Well, then, do we believe him or not? Well, what kind of laws has he voted for? Well, gun control. That tells me then that's where he's going. And when you look at what happens in countries where that happens, it doesn't fare good for the people. So we just have to, when we understand the depravity of man, it helps us to understand kind of what positions to take and what stand to make on issues. Like for me, I believe the Bible teaches that it is a curse on a nation when women rule them. For that reason, I will not vote for a woman in office. I will not. There have been several women that have run for office that I'm like, man, I agree with just about everything they're saying. Still won't vote for them. I mean, it could be the devil and a woman that believes exactly like I do, running for office, and guess who I'm not voting for? Either one of them. I won't vote for a woman. Why? Because I'm saying, yes, God, judge us. I'm helping to be a part of that. I personally cannot do that. If you can, that's up to you. That's between you and God. I'm not going to be mad at you. If you can vote for a woman that has strong conservative beliefs and stands everywhere that we do on issues, then fine, you vote for her. You answer to God for that. I'm not going to. You're going to answer for yourself. I personally cannot vote for a woman because then I'm asking God, judge us. God, bring your judgment on us. I don't want that. Now, it may be coming anyway, but I'm not going to be a part of it. I'll be able to say, well, my hands are clean from that. I got a lot of things my hands aren't clean from, but at least that's not one of them. My hands are clean there. And that's what I believe. That's when I look at the Bible, that's the stands that I take. And we need to think biblically. We need to understand the depravity of man, and it's taking us a direction. So we'll look at the flesh next week, all right?